This will be a PG, maybe even R-rated sermon. So when the children marched out, it probably was not a terrible idea. Although I did offer it to the teens, but they're working on their faith statements. So fasten your seatbelts, because anytime somebody is going to do a sermon or a lecture about anything involving dancing around a maypole, you know that Freud has kind of creeped into the conversation. And we're dealing with coded and not very highly coded language about sex and sexuality and reproduction. And so let's be out there. That's what this sermon is about. And it's also what religion is about. A lot of people understand, I think incompletely, not incorrectly, but incompletely, that religion is often used as a system for trying to deal with our mortality, our fear of death, and what happens next. And religion often does stuff like put what happens next in another dimension or coming back again to this dimension. But what almost every religion has in common is that if you understand religion, not about theologies, because not every religion has a theology, not every religion has a God, not every religion has a theological orthodoxy, well, you're sitting in one that doesn't, but almost every religion has some kinds of views about sex and sexuality and reproduction and fertility and fecundity. One of the primary issues that human beings had when we became human beings was, okay, who's going to take care of me? How am I going to pass on the legacy and the learning and the wisdom and occasionally the stupidity of my life? How is it that we're going to have crops and the crops will come back? What can we do to bring the rain? What can we do to stop the rain? What can we do to have birds and bees, as in our opening hymn, and bunnies? Okay, that was at Easter. And have all of the flowers and the crops and people to take care of us, to bless us, to be a part of our lives and be a part of our tribes. Pretty, even without understanding evolution, most of us realize that we got here by some kind of sex act. And there it is, I've said it. How much Johnny Mathis was involved for certain generations, I don't know, or the backseat of the car for other generations, I don't know, but most of us got here the old-fashioned kind of way. But nature offers options, asexual reproduction. The problem with asexual reproduction is that it doesn't advance the cause. There's no exchange of genetic information, so that the first amoeba is pretty much the same as the current amoeba. There's no amoeba television or healthcare or Wi-Fi. The amoebas just don't seem to have developed either the good stuff or the bad stuff that human beings and evolution have allowed us to achieve. So religion, even the most primitive religion, and many of you will have seen the story that kind of broke a couple of days ago and was on the news last night and today, about a 40,000-year-old fertility statue that was found in Germany. That some of the first art, the first things that we human beings did was try to celebrate and encourage fertility. We wanted women to be fertile. It's one of the reasons you throw rice at a bride. It is to fertilize the womb. They wanted large families, because in agricultural societies, a large family was what took care of you in your old age. And now that we have developed into a non-agricultural society, and we have 401ks and Social Security and gee, baby, I better rethink that paragraph. And we don't need our children to take care of us in our old age. Yeah, okay. Scratch that part. But for the most part of modern human history, we have adjusted to the changes, and religion doesn't have to simply be about fertility. Now, religion always had a mixed feeling about all of this because it wanted to encourage reproduction, but it wanted to regulate sexual activity. This is a classic conundrum. Make your own joke. And you can't? Okay, the Roman Catholic Church doesn't approve of the use of conundrums. Okay, I finished it for you. As Obama is about to find out tonight, actually, along with some other issues. And it's clear, we still are not very clear about what our values are and what contemporary values should mean. So that religions want to increase population for the strength of the tribe, and they want to regulate sexual activity. When you look at most of the sexual legislation in most of our religions, you will find that it is not holy and ordained, but it is really about having conception-efficient sex so that you have lots of children. So that's why you have prohibitions in so many societies against homosexuality. It took them a couple of millennia, but they figured out that there was a very low pregnancy risk to that. And that was a bad thing. At that time, not at this time, the world changes. And when you look at how the religious views have stayed in old positions, it's a little bit discouraging. Okay, it can be a lot discouraging. But it comes from the idea of trying to increase the tribe and to regulate the activity. Religion gets really messed up in these regulations. It's also about how to assure inheritance so that there are struggles that are involved in inheritance and in sexuality, so that you get that first story, one of the first stories, where you have Sarah and Hagar striving over who would get the inheritance, Ishmael or Isaac, and you can see how well that worked out. You have it even Rebecca against Rebecca, the same mother, struggling over who would get the inheritance, Jacob or Esau. You have the same issues of inheritance behind a lot of the Roman Catholic issues around priestly celibacy. Because the fear was, this ancient doctrine of priestly celibacy goes back just a little over 1,000 years. And to the idea that, well, look, if these priests then become bishops and these bishops have large families, they're going to want to leave their big churches and their estates to their children, and they will either end up becoming lords of a manor and in kind of alternative government, or they will end up breaking up church property into tiny little parcels and handing it off to their children. So the best thing to do was to keep them from building legitimate families. Now I say legitimate because that's right. As the only non-candidate for the priesthood to take Roman Catholic canon law from the Jesuits in Berkeley, I was surprised when they pointed out that the word celibate does not mean chaste. Celibate means unmarried. And a Catholic priest can be thrown out of the priesthood automatically for two things. One is breaking the seal of confession, and the other is attempting to marry. So if you don't attempt to marry, it should really be okay, you know, as long as the bishop promises to look the other way. All of this stuff is not truly about those spiritual issues in which they are kind of posed. They're about other ways that we handle the issues of sex and of sexuality. Part of it also is that there is an historic sense of dichotomy between the holy, the spiritual, what people think of and hope as the eternal part of us, and the physical, the material, the part that gets old, the part that slows down, the part that decays, the part that dies. And so some religious views have gone and said, look, the best thing to do to perfect ourselves is to get rid of our carnality. Get rid of our desire altogether. It's, you know, we're just not very successful at regulating it. Love is a terrible idea because it shatters families. It shatters empires. It shatters presidencies. It shatters ministries. It shatters human beings because it's so the heart is such an unregulatable place. And it is the heart that I'm talking about. And men and women often do not obey the rules. So some religious views have said, let's just get rid of it. The highest evolutionary point for humanity will be to go out of business. That's not really good for the RE program. Go out and fetch me a shaker or two as a strategy for handing off to the future and creating a legacy. It doesn't really work, but it seems to be a kind of natural religion, a kind of perception that people all over the world in different periods of time have had. Let's get rid of our base carnal desires. The Qumran community and other Essene communities in ancient times around the beginning of the Common Era would engage in ritual washing and cleansing. They created baths and spas and still pools and flowing waters to wash off the dirt, to wash off the sin. They would bathe before and after going to the bathroom, well, actually, before and after going to the desert, but I'm using a euphemism. They would bathe before and after eating, before and after praying. And they discouraged, some of them completely, and others with just in order to reproduce your first child, they discouraged sexual activity because it was carnal and they felt it was a lower mix my geographic religious metaphors, a lower chakra, that the highest sense was being up in the spiritual realm. Religion has been very unsuccessful in a whole variety of enterprises, peace being one, and regulating and repressing human sexuality being another. We are pretty much what we are. We are sexual beings across a wide spectrum of sexual identities and practices. Cannot be defined simply by one society, by one culture, by one set of rules. And I think all religious people have, and I include Unitarian Universalists as religious people, have tried to wrestle with the great irony, if this metaphor works for you, that people reflect all the time. Why was it that God put all of the flavor in the sugar and the fat? Why couldn't God have put the flavor in the celery? I mean, would it have been so hard for an omnipotent, omniscient God to figure out the flavor should be in the celery? Well, the religious have the same problem with sex, which is, couldn't God have made prayer and meditation as much fun as the ultimate creative act? At which time, you know, the stalls would be filled. it would be a really good move. And some religions try that. Some religions try through dance, through song, through fasting, through flagellation, takes all kinds, to put some kind of ecstatic experience within the religious service. We mostly draw the line at sex, but not every religion has. When you read in ancient times of the sexual practices that were part of liturgy, you understand this connection that we make. This connection that we make with the creative act, the creative process, the birds, the bees, the bunnies, the maypole, which is not simply some phallic image, but it is a reimagining of the tree of life that reaches up to the sky, and it reaches down, some believed in German mythology around the tree of life, it reaches down into the netherworld. It connects the dark to the light to the life. It's May. It's a time when we can remind ourselves of our connection to life, to nature, to renewal, to the creative act. To remind ourselves that our values are our values. We get an inheritance from every different kind of tradition over time. And we get to pick and choose to talk about and be informed and touched by various traditions. We don't take it automatically as just because it's old or just because others have done it or just because it is part of an agrarian society that we no longer live in. We as human beings, as occasionally reasonable human beings, are responsible for what we take off of that great buffet that nature and life and society offer us. It's May. It's time to dance around the maypole, to celebrate the joys that are possible in our lives, to celebrate our connection one to another, to life and to the source of life, however we understand it. It is time for all humanity, at least in the Northern Hemisphere, to let the spring come and let life be a dance.